This is our first pay-per-view showing for women's boxing in 20 years. We're fighting to raise women's boxing as a whole, you know, so it's a whole different fight. We're not going to wait on the network to give us the opportunity. We're going to go out there and make a way for ourselves and make the biggest fight. Like, the men get to get inside the ring and fight and look like crap and get another opportunity. Us women, we have to make sure we bring our A game every fight.
For the past decade, Clarissa Shields has made a very, very strong case for herself as the greatest women's boxer ever. The 25-year-old has 2 Olympic gold medals and is undefeated in her pro career. But on Friday, Shields will attempt to make a case with even greater implications that women's boxing is worthy of an audience and worthy of equality as she headlines the first all-female pay-per-view boxing card in history. Today, why the boxer nicknamed T-Rex decided to take the fight outside the ring and how the trail she's blazing might take her to a whole new sport entirely. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Thursday, March 4th. This is ESPN Daily. Michael, thanks so much for joining me again, man.
Yeah, it's great to be back again twice in, I guess, a little over a month. I'm pretty honored at this point.
Michael Rothstein covers boxing for ESPN, and his behind-the-scenes look at Clarissa Shields' journey to this moment is out now on ESPN.com. Well, Michael, we are honored to have you back on the show as well, because you have this piece you just reported on Clarissa Shields, who is the biggest star in women's boxing maybe ever, and her event coming up tomorrow night. It's being called Superwomen. Some are also calling it Herstory, a play on history. But I need you to explain to me what exactly it is that makes all of this so historic.
Well, it's a couple of things, Pablo. First is this. Clarissa Shields is the headliner on a pay-per-view card. And there hasn't been a women's fight headlining a pay-per-view card in 20 years. And we're talking, the last time it happened was Layla Ali and Jackie Frazier lied. And I don't think anyone listening to this podcast probably would remember watching that fight because it's been that long. But they went one step further. And not only is it her headlining this, it is a card completely full of women's fights. There's 4 fights on the card, and this is going to be Friday in her hometown of Flint, Michigan, in front of a little under maybe 200 fans, because that's what Michigan is allowing at this point. So this audience is going to have to come through pay-per-view, and this is, again, a risk for Clarissa Shields and for her promoter, mostly because this hasn't been done before. So there's no metrics on this. There is no read on what buys would be good or bad. All of this is her taking a big bet on herself.
And who's she going to be fighting?
She's going to be fighting Marie-Eve Decaire, who is also undefeated. And they feel like it's going to be one of the best fights in women's boxing this year, and probably the best fight they could have made for Clarissa Shields. And that's one of the challenges for Clarissa Shields, right? Is she is so good that it's tough to sometimes find opponents that are worthy of her. Very similar in some ways to what Canelo Alvarez is going through on the men's side, if you watch that fight on Saturday night, because they are both just that dominant.
So there are a lot of ingredients there that I'm going to bite into. But first off, when was the last time we even saw Clarissa Shields in the ring?
So the last time we saw her was January 2020, and that was against Ivana Habazin, and she won a unanimous decision.
Clarissa T-Rex Shields in her 10th professional fight will indeed make history. The fastest fighter, male or female, to win titles in 3 divisions.
And Clarissa Shields' plan was to fight 4 times last year. This fight against Marie-Eve Decaire was initially scheduled for May 9th. COVID ended that. So then, almost immediately, once boxing started to maybe possibly come back, her and her team wanted to be one of the first fighters back. They went to their partner at the time, Showtime, and they said, hey, we would like to be on an early card. But it just never happened. She had dates in September. She had dates in October. Then she was told, hey, you're not going to fight on Showtime at all in 2020. They went to shop it other places, other networks in the United States, and because of a backlog of fights and fighters, they couldn't find a home for this. So eventually, Clarissa Shields and her team said, you know what, we're going to do this all on our own and build a pay-per-view event around Clarissa Shields and show that she can be self-sufficient if she needs to be.
Now I've been out the ring for a year, and boxing has been back for about a good 6 to 8 months. And I just know that the network just didn't put me first. It was like, where do I go from here? Do I just wait for them to give me an opportunity? Or do I make my own opportunity? And I just decided that it's time to make my own opportunity.
So I want to take a second, Michael, here to pull back the lens on Clarissa Shields and what makes her this singular talent in sports. Refresh our memory on the basics here. Where's she from? How did she get into boxing?
So she is from Flint, Michigan, and she got into boxing in large part because of her dad. Her dad's influence was incredibly important. He had been a boxer himself in the past.
My dad had told me a story about Layla Ali and Muhammad Ali and how she took after her dad.
He had told her how Layla Ali really took after her father. This inspired Clarissa Shields.
My dad used to be a boxer, so I asked him if he'd sign me up.
Her dad brought her down to a boxing gym, and everything took off from there.
When she was younger and she was going to the gym, and obviously it's a gym full of boys, how was she stacking up even that early on?
She was hanging with them, which got her, in some ways, her nickname of T-Rex because she was really skinny. Her arms were really short, and she was the only female in the gym, and she was boxing and sparring against other fighters and was doing well, so they started calling her T-Rex because she was, you know, a kid, and she was holding her own.
Some guy walks in, and he says, "Man, that boy can fight." And I looked at him, and I said, "What?" He says, "You can fight, man." I said, "I'm a girl."
So, Mike, Clarissa was 11 years old when she first started in that gym. But by the time she's 17, she's made the U.S. Olympic team. She's readying herself for the 2012 Olympics in London. What happens there?
She wins a gold medal. She is dominant.
I just grew vicious, and I wanted to destroy anything that got in my way of my gold medal. I was just going to take what was mine. I wasn't going to let it be taken away by the judges. I wasn't going to get it by a split decision or lose by 1 point. I'm like, I'm going to dominate every match.
That's just kind of, I think, the start of where people started to say, whoa, who is this person from Flint, Michigan? And she's so young, and she's going to potentially be on the radar of boxing for decades. So she leaves London, goes back to the United States for 4 years, trains some more. Then she goes to Rio, and what does she do again? She dominates again. She wins another gold medal at 75 kilograms, and she becomes the first boxer in United States history to win gold medals at back-to-back Olympics. That's either man or woman.
Tell me what was going through your mind when you got that second gold medal.
I am a two-time Olympic gold medalist, and I won Olympics when I was 17. I won Olympics when I was 21. Like, this is not a game, this is not a joke. I can really fight.
She turns pro in 2016 after the Olympics. She wins her first title in 2017 at super middleweight. By 2019, she's the undisputed women's middleweight world champion. She has all four major belts.
The judges are in agreement. The undisputed female middleweight champion of the world, Clarissa
You can watch her, and she is just so technically sound and so gifted and so smart with everything that she does in the ring.
Shields on top of her with a right hand, another combination. Six unanswered punches. Winging right hand, misses by a left hand, rocks her. Back into the ropes with a right hand. And Shields now looking to close the deal.
It's kind of just beautiful, but also vicious and powerful. And she just has timing and skill that you just don't see from a lot of other fighters, male or female.
Shields fighting extremely confidently now, as she should.
Shields putting together textbook combinations. Lead right hand. Right hand's here for Shields. Now beginning to unload on Hamazine.
This has just been her career over and over and over again. Every fight is another step up. Every fight is another chance. Every fight is a way for her to expand what she is doing and build her brand.
Huge round for Shields and a complete victory.
She's done it really in the ring and outside of it because she's experimented with trying to do different things, trying to get endorsements. She kicked around acting for a while. She's developed a friendship with Halle Berry. All of these things that she has done in her career personally and professionally have all led to what she is hoping to be an impact person in women's boxing and in boxing in general that's remembered 15, 20 years down the road. And really, this fight on Friday is potentially another big step in that.
All right, after the break, how and why Clarissa has begun to expand her ambitions beyond boxing.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
So, Mike, I'm seeing that this Superwomen event is happening in Flint, Michigan, which, as you mentioned, is Clarissa Shields' hometown. Why do you think she wanted the fight to be there? How would you describe her relationship with the city now?
Well, she still lives there, Pablo. I think that that will tell you so much of what you need to know. She just built a house there in the past year. She still very much identifies with Flint, Michigan. Flint, Michigan is a part of her. It is very important to her because, listen, she is a successful fighter. She could live anywhere she wants, but she is choosing to remain in Flint near her family, near her friends. She often would tell me stories about how she could go grocery shopping or to Walmart, and if she walked into the store, they would actually announce over the loudspeaker that Clarissa Shields was in the store, and it became a thing. And it became like she was like this Flint Hollywood celebrity, if you want to call it that. But the fact that she's still there, and still there for a large portion of every year, is something that actually matters to her. And you don't build a house there, right, if you don't want to stick around there.
So when we think of Flint, Michigan, Mike, the number one thing that inevitably comes to mind is its tragic water crisis. It's this American city where citizens have been unable to get clean tap water. And it's been about 6 or 7 years since that problem began. And Flint continues to deal with the impact of lead in its drinking water. So, as a lifelong resident of Flint, what's it been like for Clarissa to live through this?
Well, unlike a lot of the national headlines, and unlike a lot of the attention that it's received really since 2016 when it started to really gain national prominence, Clarissa Shields lived this on a day-to-day basis. This was during her amateur career, during the entirety of her professional career. She still lives there, so she understands this and she tries to bring attention to it.
Yeah, so when I fight, I wear my hair blue so they know that Flint still has the water crisis to bring more awareness to it. Right now, the pipes are being fixed, but not at a fast pace. We still have a lot of pipes to get fixed. We still are using bottled water.
She doesn't want people to forget that this is still something that's going on, and this is something that really impacted her, her family, her friends, her entire community. And even though maybe the world has moved on from it, it is still happening in Flint.
I'm super excited, you know, to just fight on the Flint, Michigan soil because of what Flint, Michigan is going through. I'll be rocking my blue braids as always.
So I love being an advocate for my hometown.
So Clarissa is advocating on behalf of her hometown. And as we've been discussing, she's also advocating on behalf of her fellow women's boxers. But looking at what she's trying to accomplish on that front, Mike, from the women's equality front, how would you assess the financial realities for Clarissa there? How does her own pay compare to that of her male counterparts?
She's making good money. The last fight against Ivana Hobbesyn, she made $300,000. She was contracted to make around that for Marie Decaire back when it was going to be on Showtime. But somebody of her stature, because you look at what she's accomplished, and on the men's side, you're looking at people like Floyd Mayweather, and she's not drawing it anywhere close to that. I mean, listen, we've seen some Floyd Mayweather gambling slips that in one round or one fight or one night, he's gambling more than Clarissa Shields is making for a fight. Like, that's the reality of women's boxing versus men's boxing.
When you talk about pay-per-views, Mike, what that means is metrics. It means numbers. It means expectations that are specific. What's Clarissa looking for in terms of numbers, in terms of pay-per-view buys, given that she is headlining and promoting this fight in such a major way?
So this is not me dancing around the question. This is probably the reality that they don't know. And it depends who you ask. You ask Mark Taffet, who has a quarter century of familiarity with pay-per-views, ran HBO's pay-per-views for a long time. He's Clarissa Shields' manager. Mm. And he won't talk about numbers at all, other than to tell me that this is not, I repeat, not the riskiest pay-per-view that he's done. But you talk to Clarissa Shields and she says, listen, whatever it is, it's the first. When they did the first pay-per-view for boxing, period, they didn't stop just because of what the numbers were. They built on it.
What was the men's first pay-per-view numbers? You know, like whatever their numbers were, they didn't just say, oh, give up pay-per-view. You know, they did another one and another one.
And that is what she is hoping, is that this can show, hey, whatever those numbers are, that they can take those numbers and then build on it for a second pay-per-view down the road and get more attention.
If it doesn't do good numbers, people are going to say bad things, right? But what do we call good numbers when women's boxing haven't been on pay-per-view in 20 years?
When she was on Showtime, her fight against Hannah Gabriel did a little over 400,000 views at its peak. That's better than at least some male fighters that have also headlined cards on Showtime. So she is a draw, at least comparable with some other main event fighters. Can she carry a pay-per-view? That is honestly one of the big questions here. And one of the things that no one will really know the answer to until probably early Saturday morning.
And it feels important to note also that there isn't just boxing potentially in Clarissa Shields' future, because the other option on the table for her in 2021 is mixed martial arts, which is growing in stature and becoming increasingly profitable. And so what's your sense of that sort of fork in Clarissa Shields' road, Mike?
As long as I've talked to Clarissa Shields, which has been probably 2-3 years since the first time I spoke with her, she has always talked a little bit about MMA maybe as being something she wanted to do down the road. Then she had this layoff. Then she had kind of the frustration with Showtime and not having a fight booked. And it forced her to reevaluate her priorities. And she said, you know what? I'm going to give MMA a shot now. She signed with the Professional Fighters League, otherwise known as PFL. She worked out with Holly Holm, who Holly Holm was a high-level women's boxer who then went to MMA and obviously had a very, very storied MMA career.
Right.
She says, okay, I want to do both. I want to box and I want to participate in MMA. I want to be the greatest combat woman of all time.
Right now, my overall goal is to be boxing world champion and simultaneously become an MMA world champ at the same time, right? That's my overall goal.
And it's not unprecedented. Besides Holly Holm, Heather Hardy, who is a name some people might remember because she has been a women's champion in boxing, she went to MMA as well in Bellator. When I spoke with her, she said, listen, my fan base skyrocketed when I went to MMA. And one of the examples she gave was, as we were talking about earlier, promotion. In boxing, she would have to hustle to get all of her own press. When she went to Bellator, they had a car driver around. They took her on a press tour. She's like, what is all this? That's right now the difference between women's boxing and women's MMA. In MMA, women are getting a lot of respect, getting a lot of attention. You look at arguably two of maybe the four most dominant fighters in the UFC, and they're women in Amanda Nunes and Valentina Shevchenko. And Amanda Nunes, maybe the biggest star or second biggest star in UFC, period. Women's boxing just doesn't have that type of promotion or oomph behind it, which is kind of why we're at this situation for Clarissa with a pay-per-view.
So what's the financial upside for Clarissa in mixed martial arts, Mike? What kind of prizes, what kind of purses are on the line in MMA versus what's available in women's boxing?
If she ends up going into the actual PFL league in 2022, which is both her hope and the promotion's hope, she'll be fighting for potentially $1 million if she wins the whole thing. And that's not a purse that she at least said she has seen in boxing before.
You know, never been offered that kind of money in boxing, and to just have to do, you know, 2 to 3 MMA fights this year and just train. If I'm, you know, skilled and ready enough to go into the PFL league and fight in a lightweight tournament for $1 million is a huge deal.
Maybe less than 2 years in, she'll be competing for realistically a completely career-changing salary that hasn't necessarily been offered to her in boxing. Now, what could that do? That could give her even more fans. And if that happens, then she could go back to women's boxing and say, hey, I now have X number of more fans. You should be paying me more money because I'm even more of a draw and I'm now a two-sport draw.
So all of this brings us back to Flint, Mike, and this pay-per-view fight, this big event on Friday. What should we be expecting in Clarissa's fight against Dekere?
She should win. I think everyone involved, probably except for Marie-Yves Dekere and maybe some people around her, believe that Clarissa Shields is going to win this fight. It would be a pretty large upset if she didn't. And I think with all that she has talked about and all that is being brought onto her attention-wise from this fight, I think she has to win. And I think she knows it. She knows the one thing she can control isn't the pay-per-view buys, isn't the other fights on the card, isn't even Marie-Yves Dekere's performance. It's her performance. And that's something that is very, very important to her because she knows and she understands what's on the line. She's a very savvy businesswoman because she was willing to take this chance and she knows what's important and what's at stake for it, positively and potentially negatively.
Just not a women's boxing match. This is a fight for women equality and everybody can play their part. If you believe that women deserve equal rights, equal pay, equal promotion, you will tune into this fight, even if you don't like women's boxing.
That, to her, is what this is about. Yes, the fight is important. Yes, winning another title is important. But she sees this as a larger piece of the puzzle. And other female fighters that I have spoken to feel similarly.
If you don't like me, if you don't like my opponent, whatever the case may be, if you believe in women equal rights, this is the time for you to play a part.
I think every female fighter out there is paying attention to what happens here on Friday night and what these numbers are, because they know that it can be a game changer and that if this goes well, this could open up other avenues for them and also show promoters that there is some bankability when it comes to promoting and signing female fighters.
Michael Rothstein, thank you for joining us again on ESPN Daily.
Thank you for having me again. It is, as always, it is a gigantic pleasure.
Up next, an unfamiliar sensation is spreading amongst Knicks fans. Hope.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with the smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Here's another story I want you to know. I grew up a Knicks fan, just blocks away from Madison Square Garden. So you may laugh at all the people who ran out into the streets to celebrate last Saturday because their basketball team had just beaten the sub 500 Pacers. And you may dismiss everyone popping champagne on Sunday because the Knicks beat the last place Pistons, improving to 18-17. Only the third time in the last 20 years that the Knicks had a winning record that deep into the season. And sure, the Spurs proceeded to blow out the Knicks on Monday, meaning that winning record banner hung for less than 24 hours. But these Knicks are fifth in the Eastern Conference standings right now, putting them right in the playoff mix. Yes, if the season ended today, these Knicks are in the playoffs. And yeah, maybe everybody in the East is also in the playoff mix. And yeah, maybe this team is owned by Jim Dolan, the worst owner in all of sports, a person who actually made me stop rooting for the Knicks 5 years ago. And yeah, maybe this team has won exactly one playoff series in 21 years. And okay, fine. Maybe these Knicks don't even have a winning record right now. But here's the thing. These New York Knicks technically don't have a losing record right now either. Unless they lose tonight to the Pistons. I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.